This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Back of the Nest review show. My name is Chris Hambling and I'm your host as we look back at a hugely positive Palace performance as the Eagles were edged out 2-1 against runaway leaders Liverpool. After a difficult opening 10 minutes, Roy Hodgson's men imposed themselves on the game and can feel aggrieved not to have at least got a point from the game. Sadio Mane had given Liverpool the lead before some superb football saw Wilfried Zaha equalise late on. But moments later, Roberto Firmino won the game after some indecision in the home defence. Plenty of controversy to discuss, and we'll be looking back at the game as well as reviewing some of your comments and questions too. I'll introduce you to my panel in just a moment.
No paywall, no subscription.
Back of the Nest.
Fan-created podcasts, videos and articles. Free forever.
Okay, it's chat to the panel time. And first up, I think we'll talk to, and I have to give an appropriate introduction, it's Patrick O'Connor. Hi, Patrick.
Charge. Good morning. Good day. How are you?
Good day. Yeah, I'm all right, mate. Okay. A little bit of a cold, a little bit hungover still from Friday night when I went out and stuff because I'm old now. But other than that, I'm delightful. And I take it you're delightful as well over there in the US of A.
Yeah, I'm doing fine, thank you. Appreciate you asking.
How's the weather?
Played golf yesterday. It's a little bit cold. Today's raining. So winter is here, which my least favourite season is winter time. So just had to put my head down and survive it.
As you know, me and Mikey always get jealous when you get snow and you get sort of pathological about it. So not there yet, no?
No. So being born in Thornton Heath, you know, I didn't see a lot of snow. And when I did, I was, you know, happy to see it. We went to America. All you see is snow from December to February. So I get sick of it after about a day or two. So, yeah, don't like it.
Dale, you've seen snow in Thornton Heath, haven't you? So I better give you an introduction as well. Next up on the panel, it's DR Kernav.
Hello. Yeah. Yeah, all right, can I speak
right now? Stop.
Yeah, I've seen a bit of snow, but I haven't seen it in a while, to be fair. I'm just thinking about it now. It hasn't really snowed that heavily. It's been I think for like 5-6 years at least, I would say. But in New York, the weather is really cold. Like, I remember going there last March, or was it this March? I'm not even too sure anymore. But yeah, I was freezing to death and I was wearing like 6 or 7 layers.
Well, Dio, I've heard that some scientists are saying that it depends on the time of year as to whether or not it's cold.
No, like, it's well, it's cold here as well right now, but at least I can manage it. But in New York, I think it's the grid system, you know, like the way that the buildings are laid out, it's just freezing, windy as well.
So it's the grid system's fault that it's cold, right?
Yeah, and windy. Okay.
Yeah, well, I know what you're saying. I don't necessarily know what you mean, but I understand the words and how they form a sentence. So
it's freezing.
We'll go with it, right?
It's much colder than it is in Croydon. Let me just say that.
Yeah, right. So you okay? All good?
Yeah, I'm good. Same old. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I've sort of told Patrick, but yeah, I'm fine. I'm broadly fine. Yeah. we'll crack on. So just for those of you listening at home or wherever you're listening, that's the thing with podcasts, you can listen to them wherever, can't you? You might have noticed that I'm producing this week, technically producing. Mike will be doing the editing, but it does mean that there'll be a few more weird sort of pauses and occasional random clips, mainly of those drums, the baseball noise, and this kind of moody piano music. We might play that whilst DR's thinking of how to answer questions, that kind of stuff. So I've got a bit of your contact to get to later on, but of course we'll be diving straight into discussing the Liverpool game and a lot of controversy in the game. And I took a fair pasting on Twitter from a couple of people because of it. But I think, you know, it'd be wrong not to mention before we dive into the topics that it was an excellent performance by Palace. A really, just a positive, you know, we've had a tough run of games, but to sort of end that tough run against the runaway leaders in the division and put in such a strong performance, it feels really, really good. It doesn't feel quite as bad as some of the defeats have felt. And I think, you know, there is some frustration there because we played so well and, you know, we had chances. You know, Ayew's missed a great chance. Zaha right at the end missing a great chance. And, of course, taking us into the first topic, we had a goal many feel should have stood chalked off after a VAR review or a VAR review. And I should be calling it both to sort of emphasise the lack of consistency, I guess.
VAR.
But VAR, VAR. VAR, VAR, VAR. But, so of course, it sort of came towards the end of the first half after, you know, a difficult opening. Palace had been playing really well and it would have been, I think, probably deserving to go in 1-0 up with the way that we were playing. And it was a free kick that Wilfried Zaha had won over by the sort of corner flag. And a really good ball in from Luka. And it's actually flicked on by Wijnaldum at the near post. Goes to the far post where Tompkins just taps it in and you can see the players celebrating, everyone's happy. But I thought the celebrations were a tiny bit muted. So I don't know if people were just having that little bit of, you know, that caution of celebrating, awaiting a VAR check or whatever. But, you know, when the check came, the sort of first view of it, I didn't really see anything of any note other than Lovren falling in a heap and I didn't think anything of it. But once the push was highlighted, you know, I kind of, before the decision was made, I just thought, yeah, this isn't going to go our way, unfortunately. And it didn't. And, you know, I'll give my views in a bit, but I'll let you jump in there, dear.
Well, first of all, the celebrations in the stand were amazing. Like, I didn't look at the players. I lost myself. One of them situations where you just crumble up and don't know where you are for a hot second. So, yeah, the celebrations in the stand were amazing. But in terms of it being disallowed, of course, in the stadium, when it was happening, you're going to go over the crowd and you're going to say, oh, VAR, hate it. Of course, it was disappointing in a way, but it added drama to it in a way, if you're looking at it from neutral perspective. But in terms of the actual call, was it a correct one? Looking back at it, unpopular opinion, but I kind of do see the reason why it was overturned, as there was a contact from Ayew. Maybe it wasn't strong enough for Lovren to drop the way he did, but there was still contact there. That's how I saw it. But then again, was it directly linked to the goal itself, as Lovren and Ayew were not involved? No, it wasn't. So it's a bit confusing in that aspect. And later on in the game, you're looking at Liverpool's second goal, there was a case for Van Dijk potentially pushing Jeffrey Schlupp. So similar situation, not exactly the same, but similar situation did happen and they didn't overturn that. So the most thing I'm annoyed about is the fact that it was, the decisions were inconsistent. If that was a foul on Dejan Lovren, then that should have been a foul on Jeffrey Schlupp as well. That's how I see it.
And I understand your point, Dio. So I'm going to go to a couple of things. I watched goals on Sunday this morning and Cammy was breaking down the goal. And as much as I don't want to admit, Jordan Ayew clearly pushes him in the back. He just does. Now, the fact that he's not involved in a play to me is not important because a foul is a foul. That's your foul in the box. So even though the commentators yesterday when I was watching the game also said that it didn't affect the play, you can't push someone in the back. And Jordan Ayew clearly did that. So for me, it's a foul. But the point you and I think Chris might have also said is that, and I think I read it somewhere also, you can call that foul 90% on every corner kick in every professional match that you watch. So are they going to go back now? And they're not going to do it. Are they going to do that for every free kick and corner? Because they would be calling a lot of fouls, and that's going to be an issue. What I also noticed yesterday was they changed the how VAR works. They decided now, I noticed they showed the replay of the actual play, unlike at Arsenal, on the screen. So fans got to see exactly why the goal was called back. And if you watch it and you're not biased, you're going to see that there's a clear push. So as much as I don't want to admit it, that to me, that was a clear foul. My only issue now is going to be with VAR. And I've been a big VAR advocate. I think DR has kind of been, I think some of the laws have to be changed, is that they have to decide now, are they going to be calling every single push in the box, which they're not going to do. If they do that, every single goal on a free kick will basically call back.
Also, special shout out to Kevin Friend, because I thought he was awful in terms of refereeing the game. Probably the worst performance. No, honestly, probably the worst performance from a referee so far this season. I mean, he's a new Clattenburg, isn't he? I think Liverpool undefeated in their last four Premier League matches under Friend. And since 2014, Liverpool now have a hefty 77% win rate under Friend in the Premier League. I don't know if that's a coincidence, but you look at some of the decisions yesterday, I'm not that surprised.
Well, we'll get into that for a second. I do want to quickly jump back to it. I was going to make the point later on, but you brought it up, so it's a good chance to discuss it now, and Patrick's touched on it as well, around the consistency of those types of fouls in the box, and again, consistently judging it for all teams. You know, your immediate thought is if that's the other end, you know, do Liverpool get that goal chalked off? And most Palace fans, particularly as it happened, would say no chance up the other end. You know, of course, you always feel that way because you have, you know, bias towards your club. But also we do see, you know, the bigger teams do get decisions go their way more often than the smaller teams, it does seem. But again, it's hard to know that from you know, watching a game when you've got such an emotional investment in one of the teams. But, you know, you talked about the sort of slight push on Schlupp from Van Dijk, which I think it was, you know, being honest, again, I think slightly less contact than the IU push, which was two-handed in the back after an initial pull. But I think probably more troubling is if you then start to look wider, in a wider scope, as the ball comes in from the corner, there's a full two-handed push in the back from Luka on Wijnaldum. Again, nowhere near the ball and not talked about at all, but it's a push in the middle of the penalty area. And even though, you know, I'm arguing a case that it's a foul by a Palace player and a Liverpool player in the box, you know, that's not given. You know, there's no foul given there. So, and you know, then all of a sudden you've got an exact inconsistency there where we've got a goal chalked off for something that is exactly the same as something that was completely ignored. So inconsistency there. And then there's also Martin Kelly is actually climbing on top of Divock Origi as the ball comes in as well. So you could argue a foul there. And I think that's where people are getting fed up. And that's where, you know, VAR is going to have a problem, because all that stuff just happens all the time. And you can't just pick and choose what you're going to call a decision for. I would have liked to have seen the common sense of, okay, that foul has happened, but when Aldham's flipped the ball on the two players involved, nothing's going to happen. And just because Jordan Henderson's getting in the referee's face, it doesn't mean we have to go back and give that, because it was completely irrelevant to the goal. And I'd like to have seen that level of common sense applied, but letter of the law, we can't really argue. And we've had decisions go in our favour that perhaps even worse than that.
I'm watching it back now, the Van Dijk situation. And it seems like not only there's a push, but from this angle, it seems like Van Dijk's knee slightly catches Jeffrey Schlupp as well. So I feel like there's more of a case of that being overturned than IU one. If you're actually looking at that whole body and how he actually gets Jeffrey Schlupp, that is a foul. I mean, that's a foul. I didn't see this till now. But look at it from this angle. His knee goes forward and also his hand is on Jeffrey Schlupp. So there is clear contact there. So that's the only thing. Inconsistency. Why wasn't that called? Because they could see these angles. Maybe we couldn't see it in a stadium. But yeah, look, I'm just looking at it now. Wow.
And you know what? Last year, this is pre-VAR. I remember we had a discussion about this, Chris, and Dion might remember also, that there was a time, a couple of matches in a row, where on every corner kick, the referee is pulling up a player for holding, you know, blocking off a player and calling a foul. It happened up, I think, three or four matches in a row, and then all of a sudden they kind of stopped it. So for me, again, this is not necessarily a VAR thing. This comes back to refereeing. We talk about, again, the offside law. The offside law has to be changed, because this whole thing with a guy being sent to the offside is absolutely ridiculous. the handball law has to be revised also because they're trying to hand the ball to hand. I think some laws have to be changed because, like I said, I remember last year, I just remember specifically a couple of pass games where on set plays, on corner kick ticket, they would call a foul as the ball came in automatically and they would just stop the play and call a foul. And then they stopped doing it. I guess it was getting too over-officiated. And then again, now with VAR, you're looking at, you know, things small ways. Again, DR makes a great point with the Van Dijk play. Was that a foul? You could have called that back. So I think it's an officiating thing as much as a VAR issue right now. I really do.
I think that's fair. And you know, it gets the sort of last point on this topic, really, is we go back to the officiating. You know, DR's quite rightly pointed out that, you know, Kevin Friend was a troubling presence as a referee in the game. And I think in general, it does feel, you know, I probably said it more, I think it was even a couple of seasons ago, right? I said that there's the Premier League scripts we're in. I think it was actually under De Boer where we played Liverpool away from home, second game of the season. I just got nothing, not a single decision. And I just felt at that time, it's like that's where you start to question the integrity of the whole Premier League itself, as well as just the officiating. But I do genuinely think there's always a problem when the bigger teams, the more high-profile teams, the more high-profile players are involved because, you know, referees being human beings, they are influenced by those personalities and by those teams and by those stakes. And in a way, that's what VAR is supposed to be there to help iron out. It's to help go into these situations where, you know, a referee has been influenced by the crowd, influenced by the opposition captain or the players around him. And he's given a decision that's been, you know, unconsciously biased, but it's still there. And that's, you know, and when it's a key decision, you want to see VAR, you know, technology applied to actually undo that damage. But unfortunately, what we're seeing again is a complete lack of the system support in that situation. But again, in this one incident, it's hard to argue. But what I did, I like to see the fact that the decision and the clip for it was actually played in the ground. DR, did you see that on the big screen?
I couldn't get off mute. Yeah, I did actually see it. And it was clear. I saw it on a screen where IU actually pushed Lovren. And that's why, from that point on, I was like, yeah, I think there is a point there. But as I said, that didn't stop me from singing FUVAR.
It didn't help, did it? People seeing that, people didn't just suddenly go, oh no, there was a push. So personally, I think the thought behind it, but I don't think that helps. What I think would absolutely help is just, again, seeing, and a lot of people have talked about it, seeing the referee go to the VAR monitor and look at it himself, and cause the referee has given the goal. And it's him that's being overturned. So what he should be able to go and have input into whether or not he agrees with the interpretation of the VAR officials. And I'm not necessarily saying he has to do that for every incident, but something like that I think is important enough that you've really got to work to protect the integrity of the decision. And that's what gets people angry. And just to sort of finish this off, those of you who did get angry with me saying it was probably about fair enough on Twitter, I didn't give the decision, so... You know, don't take it on me, all right? And I took no pleasure at all from having that opinion. I would much rather have the opinion that it was a completely unjust decision and spend 5-6 hours today ranting about it. But unfortunately, I don't feel that way. Although I am frustrated, and I think we didn't get what we deserved from the game, which is a real shame.
Don't believe him, guys. Hamburg's related to Kevin Friend. Put their pictures side by side and you can see that. Amber's related to Kevin Friend. You're not believing
let's pick that apart.
He said that before the show. He said that, you know what, Kevin Friend is my distant cousin and I felt bad for him after the game. You had to go on, just let it all out.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I mean, there is no resemblance there, is there? Let's face it. Also,
there is. He's related to Kevin Friend, guys. Don't listen to him, but yeah.
You've just become confused. Kevin's just my friend. There you go.
Oh, wait, is he? Exactly, see?
No.
Yeah, here we go. I'm telling you.
It's an incredibly weak pun on his surname. Right, we'll move on and we'll talk a little bit more about the game now, although I dare say we'll touch on more controversy later on, potentially. Just before we do jump into that, we've been a bit lax in putting the WhatsApp number out there for you to give us your voice review. So I want to make sure I push that again today. So chuck this number in your phone, 0203-575-1266. And you can use that to send WhatsApp voice messages to us to react to the game, and we'll play them on the show. Apologies for those of you that have and we've not used them. Say it's just been a little bit hectic at back of the Nest Towers of late, but we'll get back doing that properly fairly soon. So. And obviously plenty of contact as well we've had this week. We'll get to as much as we can, but always appreciated. So get in touch with us on the socials, or if you haven't got any of those, you can email us hi@backofthenest.com. Thank you to everyone that has. We have people giving us feedback, suggestions, all that kind of stuff. It's all welcome, and we do take it all seriously and have a think about how we can improve the show off the back of it as well. So thank you to everybody who's got in touch to either say positive or negative things or make suggestions. It's always good to hear. Thank you. And also, if you're feeling happy about it, chuck us a review on iTunes or your relevant podcast app. I mean, 5 stars is the absolute minimum. I believe that's the law now, that you have to give 5 stars. So if you could just do that, that'd be amazing. And that helps other people find the show and hopefully enjoy it. Right, gents, let's get into the meat of the match itself. Once again, emphasis on the fact it was a very good performance. In fact, Andros Townsend, after the game, called it the best performance of the season, and he talked particularly about how the players were without possession and how many they restricted Liverpool to very few chances, which I have to say was a big take home for me as well. I thought I was really surprised at just how well we negated Liverpool's strengths, and they ended up scoring through not quality but just a little bit of indecision on a couple of incidents, and yeah, we can consider ourselves very, very unlucky. So Let's talk first up about the fact there were no changes from the Chelsea lineup in terms of personnel. The only change was on the bench, where Riedewald dropped out and Max Meyer joined the match day selection. But there was much more that was different than that. And I think Dior and I were talking before Patrick joined us earlier on about the fact that you can see what the difference was in terms of the positions of the players. So I think you're going to talk a little bit about that as well, Dior. But if I start, the thing that was really noticeable for me in terms of looking at the average positions of the team was not only that Townsend and Zaha were pushed up the pitch and Ayew was that little bit higher, but actually the midfield three, although still very much kind of averaging out in a sort of straight line across the midfield, they are actually more advanced than the fullbacks, where usually we do see the fullbacks push beyond the midfield. And I think that really made a huge difference in the game, that the midfield was much more involved further up. And you didn't have any single person sitting back and letting the others go or anything like that. They moved as a unit. And you know, Liverpool found that very, very hard to break and incredibly hard to get down the flanks, particularly on the right-hand side, where Coyote got very, very close to Joel Ward throughout the game and really gave an awful lot of backup. And obviously Martin Kelly, when he came on as well, got the benefits of that. And Liverpool focused a lot of their attacks down Patrick van Aanholt's side, where obviously Zaha was in a much, much more advanced position. And neither Luca nor McArthur got quite as close to PVA to protect that side. So, but overall, a really good little shift in not necessarily formation, but just those, the sort of intent and the positions around it.
I agree. I mean, you look at the charts compared to Chelsea, Andros was way more up the pitch. Jordan Ayew was also up the pitch. And also, as you said, the midfield three, they were more forward as well. And just looking at the game itself, forget about the player chart, the position charts. You could see it from the eye test that we weren't sitting back. And Roy actually said this before the game, which I wasn't too sure about, if it was actually playing mind games with Jurgen Klopp. He said that we're not going to sit back. And I was like, are you sure about that? We know what's going to happen. And I think others were with me when he said that. We weren't really believing in him, but fair enough. We really didn't approach the game like we have the other previous four to three games against the big sides. And just a reminder that, yeah, this is it's Liverpool, but this is not only Liverpool from last season compared to this season. This season, they seem like they have a different kind of belief. They're playing even better football. And also, they're the European champions. Like, and the fact that we approached this game in this manner and gave them a good chance and we should have came with something out of the game is just encouraging to see. And I mean, that's the thing. I was thinking about this. I feel like we've got more attacking players than defensive players in this team. And we saw it yesterday that when we do play attacking, we look way more dangerous than us just sitting back and trying to hit teams purely on a counter-attack and sitting back deep. And I mean, the manager plays a massive part in that. Imagine Roy Hodgson managing that Liverpool side yesterday. Would they have played the same way that they would have played the way that they did under Klopp? No, they wouldn't. So manager has massive influence, and Roy gave them freedom yesterday, and I thought it worked out pretty well. Hopefully he gives them the freedom against less opposition, and like that, I think we'll pick up more results.
Yeah, that's the thing. Without a doubt, we were more aggressive, and that's my frustration, why he chose to do it against the champions-elect and European champions as opposed to trying against a Leicester, Chelsea, and even Arsenal. Because I think if we had done that, we might have picked up more than just a single point. You know, hindsight's a wonderful thing, and maybe we wouldn't. But you can just tell, I mean, Zaha and Townsend were so influential. And again, Townsend getting back into the lineup has been a huge change for me, I felt. He was brilliant yesterday. Set up Zaha for the goal, set up Zaha for essentially a second goal. Played really, really well. Took on players. We got crosses in. We actually outshot Liverpool 16-12. I can't remember the last time we outshot a top side, either home or away. So we took more shots. I mean, you know, you had the Schlupp chance. You had Lugo had a couple of really good shots. Ayew had a couple of shots. I remember in the past, I told you, I don't remember, you know, things that happened in the match that were memorable. But in this match, there were so many chances that we had because we were on the front foot. And that's why I'm disappointed with the previous four matches. But I think we could have done this against the Leicester. And like I said, and even Chelsea, and maybe got something out of it as opposed to waiting to play the best team in the country and do it. So it's within us to do it. That frustrated me again that the manager waited till now. Glad it happened. Love Townsend and Wolf's comments after the match about, you know, want to take it full, but we've got to really decide that this is what we're going to have to play red season, start being so passive.
Well, I do think in some ways, you know, it is for the team to kind of show that to the manager at times, you know, give him that belief in them. And I think the players did that. I do think that the point I made earlier was really important with Townsend, in that Coyote was asked, you know, really to sort of hang mostly around that right-hand side and give that extra bit of protection, because that just gave Andros that freedom. You know, we've picked Andros out a few times and saying that, you know, it feels like, in the past, the way he's being played, that he's being destroyed, because he's not being allowed to play his natural game because of the defensive focus. So I think the coaching staff and manager did a brilliant job just giving him that extra freedom. And he really just took that opportunity with both hands, given that license to get at players. I don't think I've seen him use skill to beat players on such a regular basis like he did in this game. And it was brilliant to see. I mean, spoiler alert, he was my man of the match by quite a way. I just thought he was absolutely superb. And if he's playing like that for the rest of the season, you know, we'll win more games than we lose at this rate. I mean, that performance shows us what we can do and what we should be doing. And I'm sure, you know, Roy is not stupid. You know, the coaching staff are not stupid. They will see that and they will take a lot of learning from that as well. And, you never stop learning about your players and your team. And, you know, it was a really important game, in my opinion.
Quickly on Andros' stats. 3 key passes, 4 successful dribbles, 2 accurate cross passes, and 91.7% passing accuracy. You give belief to this team by telling them that they could play like that week in, week out. And I'm pretty sure that, one, the fans will help, will like Roy more and will enjoy the football more. And 2, the players will actually go out there and show more performance like that. I'm not saying that every performance will be like we played against Liverpool. Of course, you have your off days. But I think a more of an attacking style of football suits our players rather than what we usually do.
And to point out what Hambo said, I'm going to agree. 100% credit to Hodgson and the staff, because by using Townsend and Zaha in that way, it really clipped back and pushed back Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold, who are 2 of their most attacking players. And by pinning them back, it allowed us to get forward more. you know, negated a lot of their attacking ways. And I think, again, that's credit to what Hodgson and the staff side to do with them. So again, fair play to them and great job by them yesterday with that game plan.
Absolutely right. We talked about chances. I think one of the key chances early on in the game was a ball put in by Kouyaté to Ayew. And he's just, you can just see that almost split second of indecision. And he goes to plays it with the outside of his foot rather than the inside, knocks it wide. It's a huge opportunity in the game. You know, it's always a what if. You do wonder if we'd put that away. And I want to sort of bring up a point now. As much as we absolutely love Jordan Ayew now, and, you know, and the effort that he gives and, you know, the quality that he's showing as well. You know, it's sort of, I know there's almost a bit of a joke about how much people are loving Ayew, but, you know, it is serious. Everybody does recognise the hard work and quality that he has. But, of course, we've been linked in the press with a number of strikers of late. And, you know, you mentioned, Patrick, that obviously we created a huge number of shots, created some proper chances. And you do wonder if that's the difference between us being, you know, a side that has a sort of up and down roller coaster type season and us being consistently good and pushing into that sort of top half of the table and staying there. So we've been linked with Edouard at Celtic. Olivier Giroud, linked with him as well. And of course, DR, your favourite, Chalov. You know, can you imagine getting to the January window and Roy saying that, you know, I want Chalov, DR?
Hopefully not. Honestly. No, it's like with Chalov, I'm not a Russian footworks, but when we were linked with him in the summer, of course, the first thing that you do is that you go and you watch a couple clips of him and see how he plays and read into him. And to be honest, I wouldn't spend 25 million on him. I really wouldn't. I just don't see it working out one way or another at Palace. I mean, you look at some of the goals that he scored there in the Russian League, fair enough, they were just average finishes inside the box, majority of them. And I'm just not convinced on Chalov. But one player that you did mention, Edouard, is that how you pronounce his name?
No idea.
Yeah, okay. Him, the Celtic player, the 21-year-old French striker. That's the type of player that I was actually more...
Edouard, maybe, or something like that. I can't... Edouard, yeah. I don't know.
No, it's
one of those things.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a player like him, I'm more convinced with. I mean, watching it, he can shoot with his left foot, right foot. Seems like he's got a bit of strength, a bit of pace. So I can see his game translate more into Premier League and our style of football rather than Chalov's, in all honesty.
Well, I just hope we don't get to the end of the window and just think, where is Chalov? Where is Chalov?
That's not going to happen.
Anyway, okay. Again, just trying to use Hesketh's joke to annoy you, DR, and you just went with a serious answer. Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. I am making a serious point there about the fact that, you know, Roy's talked repeatedly about, you know, getting goals in this team, and he's more of late been talking around how almost that we have to play a certain way because of that lack of firepower that we have. And we'll come to talking about strikers a little bit later on as well, but, you know, we are definitely in the market, you know, with some money in January to try and bring someone in. It's clearly recognised as a very, very important thing, a very tough thing to do to get guaranteed goals. It's not really possible that you know the striker you're going to buy is going to settle and be able to take those chances and be able to fit in with the system and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, as well as fullbacks, I think, you know, that's something that's hugely important in January. And, you know, January will be here very, very soon. And that'll be the difference between us, I think, kicking back up the table and maybe drifting for the rest of the season.
So I have a point to make, and it's a little off the wall, so just bear with me. I'm a big Jordan Ayew fan, and I know who you are, Chris, too, but I feel that he seems to flourish more of feeding off of scraps, if you know what that term means, obviously with fewer chances. I find that, like yesterday, we created a lot of chances. I would say he had three or four really good chances that he didn't score, and I think it might be time to have Benteke back in the lineup. And I'll tell you why I say it. I know everybody's ready to throw him out and get rid of him, but I just feel like when he came yesterday, he showed a lot of confidence. Jovi had kicked the goal he set up for Wilf. He scored the goals, you know, over the international break with Belgium. I think that the way we're playing now with the confidence of both Wilf and Townsend, it might be time to put him in. And I feel it would be very, very harsh on Jordan Ayew, but I just think that the chances of where we're playing now, I think that honestly that Benteke would benefit more with his movement and his way of play than would Jordan Ayew. Again, I think that's a bit harsh, but I just kind of throw it out there to you guys. What do you guys think about that?
I want us to approach the Benteke situation like we did with Andros. When Andros got dropped to the bench and we eased him and slowly back into the team, and he actually got a couple of good performances to earn his start. I wouldn't start Benteke against Bournemouth. I think that we play next game. But Benteke
Burnley, yeah.
Was it Burnley? Oh yeah, I'm not too sure.
Yep.
Burnley. I still wouldn't start him. But I mean, if you're talking about Benteke coming on, yeah, he had a good game. He was involved with the first goal as well. But that's so there were lots of positives from his game. But I wouldn't start him just now. But it's important that Benteke actually comes on and makes an impact just for Jordan Ayew's sake, because it's a long season. I mean, if Benteke doesn't perform to a standard where he can't, Roy doesn't trust him to come off the bench, then you're going to overload Ayew with so much work that when it comes towards the end of the season, he's just going to be absolutely knackered. So there's two positives coming from this game, that Benteke, yeah, he is performing, but that's going to help Jordan Ayew in the future as well.
I will say this, and I'm not the only one who thinks it, looking at Twitter and some of the contact that we had as well, that I think Wilf is much more of a threat with Benteke on the pitch.
Totally.
I just think when Wilf has got something to feed off, and I think the two of them do have quite a similar wavelength. And you look at, again, the setup for our goal. You know, Benteke plays a massive part in that before knocking it to Townsend. And it just, but the sort of confidence and the pace that he played at there, you know, we've used to kind of see Benteke used as this kind of battering ram in a central position, and his movement sort of goes out the window. But coming off the bench, you know, with a point to prove, you know, obviously he's always up for the game against Liverpool anyway. But, you know, coming back off, as you say, Patrick, the confidence from scoring for Belgium, he was just that little bit sharper, you know, with a tiring defence as well. But, you know, seeing him sort of face up a defender and, you know, sort of shift the ball and put it back across, you know, you like to see that. He went very close with, you know, an acrobatic effort as well. And yeah, I agree with what you're saying. It might be time. It might be time to give him a chance. But, you know, Dion makes a very good point as well that, you know, it's a balance in how you manage that to get the best out of him. And I suppose, you know, he said it himself, Benteke, there is a bit of a decision to make in January because there is interest in him. Yes, we've got him on that extra year, but pretty much January is where he's going to be at peak value for us. And we will probably need to make a call on whether he stays at Palace, I think.
Another problem with Benteke starting is that it seems like whenever he does, we're just over-relying on hoofing the ball up to him and expecting him to just head the ball on to Anderson Wilf. And don't get me wrong, he's a big lad. He can do that. But I don't think it works out best for the team when we play like that. I feel like when we play more on the floor, like you saw with the first goal yesterday, it didn't start from Benteke heading the ball to Zaha and him running down a pinch. It started from all on the floor. So I feel like if we were to start Benteke, because how we've naturally just been, he's been that guy where you just kick the ball up to him, I feel like that will continue. Whereas if you take him off the bench a bit and play a bit more on the floor as the game goes on and whatever, and players get used to him playing on the floor, then I feel like when he does start in the future, I think he'll be more ready for it rather than right now.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, let's have a little chat about the goals. So obviously Liverpool's first goal was Sadio Mane, and he'd got in sort of moments before and shot wide. And, you know, the little warning sign that we had was that he got right in between the centre-backs. And, you know, Vardy did it and does it a lot, but did it against us as well. Kept finding that gap between the two centre-backs. And that's a little bit of a concern for me, because two players marking one player, and you really do want one of them to sort of just take that little step nearer and just to keep his eye on him. Because otherwise it really does expose you. And particularly when you've got players who can pick a pass like Liverpool have in their side, it just opens you out to you know, in a second you can have a player in behind and having a shot on goal. And you don't really want to give those opportunities away. But anyway, he did miss. And from the goal kick, you know, the header comes straight back, ends with Firmino, and everybody backs off. Again, we see that a fair amount in this team, in the way that we like to defend. It's all about positions, cutting off angles, that kind of stuff. But again, I just every now and then I think we just want one player to take that responsibility, take that step out. And I think that's probably never more apparent than when the ball goes back out to Robertson and he puts the cross in. It's not a good cross, and everybody misses it. You know, it looks like Firmino's going to get it, but he misses it. But the two players running back, which I think is MacArthur and Milivojevic, they're running back towards goal, so they don't really want to touch it. So it's Tompkins who's looking up the pitch, and he's the one that you want to step out and just get a foot on that, just hit that ball away. But he kind of just puts his arms out and stops because he's just got that little bit of indecision. And it's not what you don't even call it a mistake. It's just that slight lack of just taking charge and sort of just not trying to, you know, anticipate too much. Just get your foot on the ball, take the responsibility, clear it, and he might have had a chance to get there before anyone else did. Unfortunately, he didn't. You know, Mane's not hit the best of shots either, and I think Guaita might be a little disappointed that he's got hands in and it's come off his hands and gone in off the post. Not a great goal to concede, but ultimately, you know, there's not too much of an error there. It's just a scrappy goal and a bit of bad luck.
I think from now on, whenever we play Liverpool or a side that has Mane starting, we should automatically adjust to say that, all right, we're 1-0 down because this guy is going to score against us. Feels like he just scores against us every time he plays. But overall, if you're looking at the defender, I mean, over the last couple of games, we've complained about corners and some of the goals that we've conceded. In the first half, I thought we were so good defending and the communication was clearly there. Liverpool were putting in early crosses in, but we managed to handle them pretty well. And shout out to all four of the back line. So that was really positive to see. But then conceding a goal like that, it's just annoying because, as you said, Hambo, it is not a good cross into the box. And I feel like watching it back, it seemed like Tompkins pulled out of it because he saw James MacArthur was about to clear it and he kind of miskicked the ball. Oh, he didn't actually kick it. He didn't touch it. He missed it. And which lands to Mane. And when he shoots, Guaita has a touch of it, but it hits the post and goes to the other post. It's such like a FIFA goal in a way. So that was the annoying thing about it. But overall, there were so many positives from the defensive side of things as well after what we've seen over the last couple of games.
Yeah, if you guys gamble, next time we play Liverpool, bet on Mane. Scored 8 in the last 10 versus us, 5 straight matches. He's worse than Son. He scores every time you play against him. It's very frustrating. As far as the goal is concerned, I'm with you. It's a frustrating goal to give up. I think it was defended poorly. I guess why you've always already went through it, but I think it was unlucky for Guaita. I mean, it did deflect off of Cahill and then hit both posts. I mean, you can't get much more unlucky than that, but, you know, I could be disappointed in him not saving it. But like I said, I think the deflection would make it me harsh for me to say he should have saved it. So I just a disappointing goal to concede.
It's worth noting he made a terrific save from Firmino later on as well. You know, out of this world kind of save. Just can't quite believe he did it. It's another brilliant reaction save. So, no, not really sticking the boot in there at all. I think just to sort of back up Diaz's point about how well we defended, I just want to make the point that that is what the point is. It's so difficult to defend at that level for every single second of a game. There's always something that gives. Otherwise, every match would end 0-0, wouldn't it? You always get those little bits of bad luck, that little bit of spin off the ball or something like that that just takes it away. And, you know, when you've got almost a 50-50 decision to make, it's so tough to make the right call every single time. It's you know, the margins are so fine. So as much as we've kind of said, yeah, it's bad defending, I think we're saying it's bad defending with a kind of understanding that we're not really sure that who could have actually done much about it. It's all hindsight. So certainly no real criticism from me.
And also just looking at our defending as a whole and the way that we played, I don't think it's a coincidence that we defended well. I mean, when you're sitting back all game and you've got your attacking players asked to defend rather than attack, there's so much pressure. And if we approach this game like we did with the other four games previously, then I don't think we would have even played this good or even had a chance against Liverpool. But it helps when our attackers and our midfielders are so engaged to push and attack the Liverpool defenders when they have the ball or Liverpool midfielders that it eases the pressure off our defenders as well. And I feel like that's why we should continue playing this way going forward because, yeah, we're good going forward, but it also helps defensively in a way that you release the pressure off them.
This is very cliched, but, you know, if we take any of those early chances that we had, the IU chance, the Luka chance, the Maka chance, I believe it was Maka had a chance. So if we get any of those chances and we go up, it's a different match because they didn't create a lot. I mean, Chris is right, Guaita made a great save. and Firmino and me and Mane missed the chance before he scored the goal. But if we could have gotten ourselves ahead and could have dictated a little bit more, it would have been a different match. But that's how football is, and that's what makes it so frustrating yesterday.
Definitely. And, we've been saying for weeks, really, and it can be interpreted as negative when you're losing a fair few games on the trot. But, I was making that point that sometimes attack is the best form of defence. And it is a cliche, but there's a reason that cliche exists, because it's often true. And we just saw that balance shifted in this game. And that, again, we go back to the credit that the staff and the manager and the players get for doing that and recognising that and being able to do it against such a good side. So, hopefully we take that and kick on. And hopefully another thing that we take and kick on was just how good the football was for our equaliser. We've talked about it a little bit, but it comes from being under a little bit of pressure down on our left, Liverpool's right. And Wilf just does what he does every now and then and just takes the ball and runs with it and just is too strong, too skillful for the Liverpool players, and particularly Alexander-Arnold, who he was a terrible, terrible defensive right-back. Great technical player, amazing technical footballer. Awful right-back when you put him under pressure. And Wilf just blows them away. Puts Benteke down on the left, and he does a tremendous job just delaying the pass to the right moment, puts it across. Lovely little shift from Andros to Wilf. Lovely little shift from Wilf onto his right foot. Drills it into the corner and, deserved equaliser. And seeing Wilf get his first of the season, the joy for him scoring it and the fact it was such a good goal, amazing moment. And, I was going mad as well. And I dare say, DR, things were quite exciting for you celebrating that one.
Yeah, there were a couple people on the floor. I was worried that I stepped on them by accident. I mean, it was just amazing, the scenes when that went in. It was such a relief because we were playing so well that game that we deserved to score a goal. We created chances as well against a very good Liverpool side. But I mean, the most significant thing is that we managed to score a goal from Benteke playing out on the floor rather than him have a contribution from a header. It was a good pass from Benteke and a good decision, because initially when he was in the box, I thought, oh no, he's going to shoot it and he's just going to deflect and be a waste of a possession. But the fact that he actually passed it away rather than going for the shot was good to see. From a striker that's been struggling to score goals. I mean, if you're struggling to score goals, the first thing that will be in your mind is to actually shoot the ball and try to get one. But the fact that he was not greedy and he decided to pass the ball, that's very good to see from Benteke. But yeah, great team goal. And that's the way it should be moving forward. I mean, of course, Benteke's height, it does help when you're in your final third. You might want to put more crosses in. But other than that, I wouldn't really rely on him for headers, especially in the midfield where we just boot the ball up to him. That doesn't work for me.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with that. And like I say, I'd really hope we can take a lot of heart from that goal and continue. I mean, we are capable of that, and we have seen that under Roy on a number of occasions, that when we get it right, it does look really, really good. And he has put a gradual shift on our team in taking more of possession and being a bit more calm with the ball, not always punting it upfield. Because, Patrick, you probably know more than anyone, as a club, really, our identity continues to kind of shift back to that at regular occurrences. Just, we end up being a counter-attack inside, or a team that sits back and knocks it long and all that kind of stuff. It's rare that we would go and out-football anyone for any length of time under any manager, really. And we have had that gradual shift. And I think at times that's possibly where we do struggle a little bit, because we're not used to doing
it. Yeah, and it's something I think that we, when we think about it, we should be doing more. I mean, we have the talented players enough to do that. Admittedly, we do have these wobbles defensively, but you guys have already said you can't defend, you defend 90 minutes. You're going to make mistakes. And if not, you just said it'll be nil, every match will be 0-0. But we have the attacking players. And a player like Wolf, Andros, Luca, Maka going forward, we have players that can create chances. And it was, the frustration has been is that we weren't, and all of a sudden now you're playing the best team in the country. We did it, so why not do it more often? So again, hopefully this is a shift that maybe he was setting this up the whole time, the manager. We play this against Liverpool, and we push on with games against Burnley and Bournemouth and Watford and Brighton, and then we really go forward. But like I said, my concern was that, had we done this a little earlier, maybe we could have gotten a point or two more. Again, hindsight's a wonderful thing. But again, we have the potential there. And it frustrates me because people talk about our team. I think we're a better team than people want to give us credit for. We don't have to be the team struggling relegation every single season. Not this year anyway.
No, that's right. And that's where a lot of the what people are calling negativity in our show, that's where a lot of it comes from. I firmly believe we are a better team than than we're kind of given credit for. And sometimes when the comments do come from within the camp that we are, you know, we are limited or we're restricted, I don't like to hear that. It might be true, I guess, you know, they're in a better position to know than I am, but you know, I don't feel that we have to accept that. And again, we've talked about it a lot. I won't keep repeating the point, but you know, this game kind of proved that in one way. But it is only one match, and we'll see how we do from here on. But look, we talked about Liverpool's winner already, so I don't think I'll revisit that anymore, other than to say that it was a shame. There are things going on in the box that you could talk about, and we have talked about. And I just want to make one last point, I guess, that for me, the big difference in if you're talking about a foul or a push and VAR overturning that one, no Palace players are going to the ref and demanding anything. You know, Schlupp has a little bit of a tantrum and hits the floor, but I don't know whether that's him feeling he got fouled. I'm not sure. But, you know, if we're not going to react and not feel it's a foul ourselves, we can't really expect anything to be given, I don't think. And perhaps it shouldn't be that way, but it kind of always has been in football, as far as I'm.
Yeah, but actually, Chris, I do want to go over the goal, because I did watch goals on Sunday, and Chris Kamara did an excellent job of breaking down that last goal. So I don't know if you guys watched the show, but he points out that on the corner kick, Benteke has his back turned to the corner kick taker, so he doesn't see what's going to happen on when the ball's coming across. So as the corners is taken, it's him and Van Dijk, and he actually blocks out Gary Cahill, because he doesn't see the ball coming across. And by doing that, he allows Van Dijk a free run into the box. And as you guys obviously know, he gets the first touch. And after that, it's ping pong madness in the box. But his point being that had Benteke faced on and looked at the corner kick taker, he probably wouldn't have run into Cahill, which would not allow Van Dijk to be so free. And again, my frustration is, and I'm sure with you guys too, is that we've just given up way too many corner kick goals. It's to the point where it has to be addressed. And we had a comment from a listener about it. Let me just find it real quick and just point to it. Sorry, one second. It was a Twitter.
Can I quickly make my comment on this on the goal?
I found it real quick. I'll pop in real quick. Jedi from Twitter says, ping effing pong for the second goal. Panic and no one cleared it when we had four around the same ball. So the point being, obviously, is that, you know, it ping pong. And then again, Martin D2356 on Twitter. Great performance, but didn't want to lose to such a poorly defended second goal. Hope Roy spends entire week working on defending set plays. Burnley next. And again, if you go watch goals on Sunday, the two of the players that were on were Ashley Barnes and Chris Wood, who I'm sure took a long look at that set play and said, yep, we'll be up for that next week.
that is a big worry, I have to say, from those two in particular. You know, they'll take advantage of set plays. I'll let DR jump in and set, but just to make the point, prior to the Arsenal game where we conceded two in 5 minutes or whatever it was from corners, we hadn't actually conceded all season from a set piece.
So what happened?
But it's just, yes, something has changed lately. Something's gone wrong. Don't know what, but something has.
We'll call it that.
Corner flu.
Before we actually, that corner was taken, Benteke went to the front post. And I was not surprised, because if you guys realize that when Benteke was starting, his role in corners was always to stand in the front post. So it seems like he was a bit confused on actually where to go and who to mark, because his role was actually taken from him. I'm not too sure who's marking the front post, but someone said go and mark someone. And then that's when he went out there, I think, to pick up Van Dijk or pick up Lovren, one of the two. So that's a surprising thing that I noticed throughout the goal. It's like, before we take a corner, Ben take a run to the front post, and someone pointed out, like, what are you doing? You shouldn't be here. Go and mark someone. So I think there was a bit of a miscommunication in that part.
Well, again, you're right, it tends to be his role, but probably if you think about it, it's his role when he's starting rather than coming on as a sub. Because Ayu's not going to take the front post, is he? So yeah, I think that's
in the heat of the moment. In the heat of the moment, you're going to, of course, go to your natural role, and you're concentrated. So, yeah,
no, good spot that. You know, that little bit of indecision and confusion that can make the difference. And you know, maybe we could argue that it did. But okay, let's talk a bit about some performances of note. We've mentioned many of them, but I think, you know, I've mentioned Townsend. I thought was brilliant all game, and my man of the match. I thought Zaha was excellent. I really like the look of Maka and Kayate in the midfield. I thought Luka was actually effective. I've seen some people call him the weak link. I think statistically, Maka was actually the player that played the weakest in the central midfield, but I thought he had a good game. I do want to raise a slight I don't know if it's what I call it negative. It's a slight question as whether or not Coyote was the player to take off to put Schlupp on. I thought Jeffrey Schlupp did a very good job when he came off the bench. I think he worked hard. He got forward well, got back well, did all the things that he was asked to do. But I actually thought Coyote was having a very good game before he went off, and in particular, defensively. I think perhaps his passing was misfiring a little bit, and that's why he was the one sacrificed. But again, you sort of look at it, you think, was that the right call to make? But I think on this occasion, you can't question it, because we had chances to, you know, once the subs were made, we had chances to get something from the game. And that's all that you really want a sub to do, to come on and change enough for you to get that chance to get a goal or two. So I'm not going to criticise it. I was just a little surprised when he went off and that Jeffrey Schlupp came on. But, you know, when you actually look at the evidence of the game, I think it was probably the right call. Anyone else that anybody wants to pick out in terms of performers?
Not really. If you're talking about Maka, leading up to this game, he said that he's been struggling with his back for a couple of weeks. So the break came at the right time. And I mean, he's had a couple of good games before the international break. So hats off to him. I think we're going to see the best of him now, especially if he was playing the way he was when he was in 100%. I mean, right now, going up to these games against the Burnleys and the Bournemouths, where he will have probably more time with the ball and enjoy it more. So I feel like we're going to see the best out of him.
I want to point out Townsend's performance again, not just for the goal, but obviously, I'm sure you guys remember the injury time. He puts a great ball into Wilf. Wilf controls it. For me, he puts that back in the back post. He score. He tried to score. I've got no problem with that. But what a brilliant pick out by Townsend. He just had an outstanding game. And he, on that kind of form, like I said, you put a player like Benteke and Wilf on his form, we're going to do much better as far as going forward.
Yeah, for sure. One downside towards the end of the game as well was obviously around the 70-minute mark, Joel Ward going off injured. Obviously, went off injured in the previous game as well, recovered from that, but put in a tough challenge, and it looked like a clash of knees, and you do worry when that happens. I've not seen if there's any kind of confirmed result of a scan or anything yet, but obviously not blessed with options at fullback. Kelly came on and did an effective job for the last 25 minutes or so. But, you know, obviously he's really our only option out there now. So, yeah, a bit worrying, really. And obviously Ward has been superb, getting better sort of with every game. But a definite concern there.
I mean, if let's say if Martin Kelly comes in and if he does struggle, I mean, he done well yesterday. I don't want people to go and blame Roy Hodgson for our struggles. I think this goes up higher. And this was the most annoying thing in the summer. The fact that we sold Aaron Wan-Bissaka, our starting right back, and went into the season with just Joel Ward, is just ridiculous. And sometimes you could argue, look, Roy Hodgson, why are you not using Camarasa? Why are you not using Max Meyer? Fair enough, but this one is clearly not on Roy, and it's up to the management. And it's their problem, really. I'm still shocked at the fact that we haven't got another right back at the club. Not even only a right back. If Banana goes out injured, who's playing left back? Jeffrey Schlupp. I mean, it's just so poor at Premier League level.
Yeah, we won't do it, but I'd love to see us go three at the back. And I'll just tell you quick what I'm thinking about. I'd like to see Sacco play with Cahill in the back. So if you're going to do that, I guess it's not fair. They've already dropped Tompkins. So if you play those three, and you play PVA as more of a left wing back, you'd have to play, I'm going to say, Townsend at right wing back, which would probably work. Because remember, we did that under a previous manager, tried it. Then you can keep the, you know, you keep Kiarte and Luka Maka in the middle, and then obviously Wilf and, well, Benteke or Ayo. But it's not going to happen. But at this point, with Ward's injury, we're going to have to do something creative at that right back position. And since we don't have a right back besides Kelly to play there, I'd love to see him, with the fixtures being somewhat easier. I would never say a Premier League match is easy, but if he were to get, you know, somewhat creative back there, I'd love to see Sacco get in there somehow and play three at the back. I mean, again, it's a kind of a dream for me, but I think that might work for us if we try something a little bit different.
Yeah, I've thought about it a few times myself, and it's the sort of thing where if it did work, you know, it could be game changing, you know.
It really could.
But I think it's very, very high risk, and I don't think we're in a high risk place.
It's not something that this manager would ever do. And again, the real key is you'd have to have a a wing back similar to PV on the right side, obviously, because you want an attacking one who doesn't necessarily want to defend, which he does not want to defend, by the way. But it doesn't work because we don't have a replacement. I mean, we need Wan-Bissaka back there, which we don't have. So much for that idea. Mm.
And going back to what DR said, DR, remind me, we'll have a little chat when we stop recording.
Why?
Just what I'm going to say on that. Just a little chat about right back selection and transfer window and stuff. Just we'll have a chat. Ooh. About it.
Yeah, what are you paranoid as well? Where's your current friend's like distant cousin? Are you related to Parrish as well now? What's going on?
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Oh dear. Just teasing. Right. Okay. So we've got a few minutes just to get through some we'll get through some of your additional contact as well. But just very, very quickly, a nod to it. We've talked about it a few times, so we've kind of covered some of this ground, so it'll only be a quick chat, but you know, I've been sort of reflecting on just, I suppose it's not just about our show. It's about, you know, all the other shows have taken it as well. And the sort of general attitude on social media and message boards and stuff, lots of people pointing at each other and talking about how people are either blindly positive or overly negative. And there's a lot of focus on just how negative and demanding fans have been of late. And, you know, I want to know what you guys think about that in general. A couple of things from me. First, I think really important to acknowledge that we've been on a very tough run of games, incredibly tough run of games, couldn't be tougher. But I do think we should, as supporters, we should be demanding and we should be questioning. I do have concerns about what I would determine the Premier League effect on our support. And, you know, I look at myself in particular and about, I'd think in a different way now we've been in the Premier League for a period of time than I did when we were in the Championship. And, you know, I looked at the Premier League teams and their supporters and I laughed at them about how blind they were to what real football was and what real struggling was and how privileged they were to be in the position that they're in and all that kind of stuff. And I felt that they were ignorant. And I could probably look from the Championship at our fans now and think the same thing of our fans, which I don't think, I don't know, I struggle with it because I'm kind of talking about myself in a negative sense. So, you know, I am questioning my own kind of attitude towards the club and you know, sort of demanding things that are perhaps unrealistic. But I do wonder if people understand also that the difference between, you know, going onto Twitter or whatever and venting or, you know, being constructively criticizing, and the difference between doing that, analysing a football match because you do a podcast about it, but actually giving, when you go and support the team, you know, I can say this hand on heart, at a football match, I've never booed a home player. I've never sang negative songs about the home team. I've never booed a team off the pitch. I give 100% of my support in a positive way to the team at all times during matches. So, and I feel that that's the fair thing to do when you're a supporter. So just because, you know, I might rant about how frustrated I am on this show, or I might say comments on Twitter, it doesn't mean I'm any less of a supporter. And that's what's annoying me at the moment with some of the comments that are being thrown around. And I know, Patrick, you've been sort of on the receiving end of a few things as well. And what's your general feelings on certainly the attitude? Not necessarily, I'm not talking, want to turn this into an us versus them or anything like that. You know, is there a point to make about people being overly negative, or, you know, is it just about how people can't really seem to talk to each other without arguing?
Yeah, I think it might be the latter. I'm finding social media to be very difficult to deal with lately. I use Twitter as a venting venue, but I'm never abusive. I'm never disrespectful to anyone. I've never been that way. I'm not the way to a player. I've never added a player. A lot of time, like for instance, this week, I actually added Dwayne Hennessy, congratulate him on making the Euros, and everybody knows how I feel about him. I mean, I was genuinely happy for the man. I really was. I was glad for him. So I just find it, you know, you can be negative, that's fine, but you shouldn't be abusive. And I respect everyone's opinion. If you're the kind of person that, you know, just wants to say, you know, you're glad to pass in the Premier League, I have no issue with that. I'm the kind of person you know my story. I've been a Palace supporter for, gosh, oh my, almost 50 years now. I can honestly say that. I remember when I was like 4 or 5 years old, remembering got my dad at my first game. It's a long time. So I've seen everything. I've seen as much as anybody on Twitter can talk Bob White, a great person on Twitter, you know, former Palace youth coach, and we go back and forth, and he's brilliant, and he talks about, you know, his views on Palace, and, you know, so I've seen it all, and I'm just really glad we're in the Premier League, but I'm also the kind of person who wants to see Palace do better, because I've seen Chelsea be as bad as we were way back when. When I was a child, Chelsea wasn't, they won trophies, obviously, but they were in the same division as we were, in the second division, and they've come a long way. Yeah, because they got a billionaire owner, and I get that part, but look at their youth. I told you this last time I was on. Look at their youth policy, and I know it's due to a lot to luck, but look how they are. I want Palace to do better. I don't see the need for looking at games like against Liverpool and saying, oh, we played well, but we lost. I get it, and I understand that I'm not unhappy with the performance yesterday, but why do we have to be that way when we can strive for better? So as far as the opinions of people, I respect everyone's opinion, but it doesn't have to be the same, you know, because mine is different than yours. And the negativity can be very difficult. It can be very difficult to deal with. I'm with you, Chris. I've been to hundreds of Palace matches, even though I haven't been in England, you know, England of late. And when I was, you know, young, and I've never booed a Palace player. They're players I didn't like. You know, I've told you about players I don't like, but if they don't like someone, doesn't mean I'm going to boo that person. I respect people's opinions on it. So I just find that, you know, if you want to be the person, and again, we're in the Premier League, I think Palace can do better, because I've seen clubs like us, or, you know, do better. And I don't think that we have to just say, oh, we're not in a relegation zone, so, you know, just be happy. No, I think we can, it's okay to want more for your club. And it's also okay to disagree, but just do it respectfully, as opposed to being so disrespectful. I think at times people can be very disrespectful towards others. I think needs to stop.
Yeah, I mean, it is fairly typical of that kind of anonymity. Well, not necessarily anonymity even, because most of us are real people on Twitter. But, you know what I mean? It's just kind of that effect that you can just fire off a comment. And I know I was talking to people directly after the game, and I've got, honestly, you know, those of you that were talking to me on Twitter yesterday, I've got utmost respect for you. I didn't take any of it, you know, badly or anything like that. I'm not angry about it or anything like that. I take all comments as they're intended, but also directly after a game, people can be very, very frustrated. And if sometimes when they see that differing opinion to themselves, they're like, you know, it's like red rag to a bull, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
I was joking about it.
Right.
I was joking about it earlier. Like, I didn't give the VAR decision. I just happened to think it was probably just about right. You know, even though Lovren threw himself to the ground and it didn't affect the goal, I kind of could see why it was, but you know, I shouldn't then have to expect to be sort of taken to task on it, really. But it is what it is. I'm just concerned. I don't want this. I acknowledge this show has unfortunately become, you know, we have been quite negative of late. And I think it's a bit of glib to call it just negative full stop. I think, you know, we're analysing what we're seeing. And if what we're seeing, the analysis comes out negative, then that's not necessarily our fault. But I do think there is a balance to be struck, and perhaps we have drifted a little bit too far down one way. So we'll certainly think about that. And I hope this show has shown that we can and want to be very, very positive about positive performances and good things being done, even if the result doesn't go our way. Kernaz, what do you think?
In terms of what I think, I was going to go with more of a positive approach and say that, look, at least we're not Man United fans who are suffering right now. Well, they're losing 1-0 away to Sheffield United, and the player on loan, Chris Morden, is tweeting that he's got a goal, an assist and a clean sheet while they're losing 1-0 down. So, I mean, there's so many positives. At least we don't support United. But in terms of the negativity on social media, I mean, after the game, you're right, Amber. I feel like you made a very good point in terms of once you lose or you draw and you're just frustrated and you see someone that offers a different opinion to yours, it could make you feel some kind of way. And it seems like you could lose a bit of yourself. I feel like I use that phrase a lot. Losing myself, but yeah, you could. you can actually be someone else, and you can make comments which you don't intend to. But I feel like at the end of the day, we have been a bit frustrated over this last season or two because of the style of football that we played. I mean, you look at last season at home towards the end of the season, the atmosphere wasn't there because we just wasn't playing good enough football. And it seems like it's not like a one game thing. When people are frustrated, it's been built up from a long time, and some people are just not clearly happy with Roy's football, and there's people who are, and it's going to be constant arguments, because you can understand both points of view in terms of, look, Hodgson will keep us up, but then people are saying that we should be playing better, we should be getting better results, and once them type of people clash, then of course it's going to be toxic. But all I have to say, just be positive that we don't support Man United.
No, I agree with that part, definitely. And you make a very good point there, Dio. You know, there, and I think the important thing is there's always a balance, isn't there, where, between what you say being constructive, whether it's positive or negative, and what you say just being blindly one thing or the other. I think, you know, certainly some people drift into the realm of if you say anything that is criticism of the board, the club, the manager, players, they turn on you straight away. And those people, you think, well, come on, you actually, you know, I'll give an example, not naming any names, but there are people out there who, if you criticise the manager, their responses are simply that, oh, he's been a manager for 43 years, so you cannot possibly say anything that is right where Roy is wrong. You can't, you know, he's never wrong, basically. And you just think, well, actually, no, that doesn't really stand up to any kind of logical scrutiny at all, does it? Because nobody's perfect. And, you know, Roy knows more about football than any of us will ever know, for sure. And, you know, he is a fantastic manager and he knows how to get the best out of what he's got. But he doesn't what he thinks and his ways aren't necessarily the only way. You know, and we can come up, you know, we all watch a lot of football. We all watch our own team with an incredible amount of scrutiny. And we all know our players and we all know their strengths and weaknesses. And we all make different decisions about it, and we may be right or wrong. But what I'm basically getting at is you can question anything, absolutely anything at all. It's fine. You can question it. You don't have to, you know.
I was about to say that. I mean, apart from them people, I'm happy, whatever. I mean, if we can't criticize Roy because he's been a manager for 50 years, then let's just bin off social media, bin off this podcast and just say, you know what? He's been a manager for 50 years. He must be correct. I mean, just because he's been manager for 50 years doesn't mean that he's going to get every decision correct. People are right to criticize him. I've backed Roy before. I've criticized him because he's got experience, but it doesn't mean that everything he does is correct based on that experience. So, yeah, I mean, them kind of people, if you're listening, I just find it annoying that Roy can't do any wrong because he's been a manager for longer than we've basically been alive. I don't think that's correct. I feel like he can still make mistakes like any other person. Of course, I won't take away from the experience side of things. And Roy's a top-class man as well. You can see that the work he does with the club and the foundation. But if we're talking about football and certain games where we're underperforming and you're looking at tactics, then yeah, I can blame Roy. It doesn't matter how long he's managed the game. He can make mistakes just like anyone else in this world can. No one's perfect. I like that.
Anyway, so like, you know, just wanted to talk around that topic there. I'm sure we'll touch on it again. But hopefully people get the point that we're making. But I do, you know, obviously I do want this show to be as positive as possible and as enjoyable to listen to as possible. Always welcome to hear feedback and all that kind of stuff. It'd be appreciated. And like I say, I hope today's been a much more positive show. That was definitely the intention. And that was more than anything, that's driven by the fact that it was an extremely positive and good performance. So we'll be I don't know if you can hear the dog outside my house.
Yeah.
Isn't it interesting?
What type of dog do you have? Oh, is it not yours?
No. That's what happens when you live in a house that backs directly onto a street in a terrible, terrible area of Reading. I don't know if Reading's as bad as New York. Is it nice where you live, Patrick?
It is very nice. I have a very quiet suburban area. Lots of pets but not a lot of people, so I'm very contented.
Good. I'm glad to hear. You seem to be quite close to that baseball park, though. I don't know what's going on there.
But... Yeah, PSI. I keep hearing this weird sound every time. Yeah, weird.
Yeah. Anyway, so a few bits of listener contact left over. One of the topics that we did touch on earlier, and Cheesy Palace has called it an unpopular opinion, but I don't know, it's not necessarily so, given what we talked about earlier. But he said, should we give Benteke a chance by starting him for a game or two just to see if he has something?
Yes.
He's come on and done well. Give him a chance. I know that it would be hard to drop Ayew, though.
Agree.
Yes, from Patrick. DR said kind of a yes, but he might also be better staying on the sub bench. You think right now? And I agree it's hard to drop Ayew, but I think that there's a possibility we can do that with basically what Patrick was saying. If Wilf and Andros are flying like they were against Liverpool, you kind of think, well, Benteke might be the man to take proper advantage of that. But it's a hard call. It really is a hard call to make. And Mark Drew also mentioned that it was a great performance, but lacking that clinical goal threat, which we touched on earlier with us being linked with a few strikers, and maybe that being the difference. So that as well. That last comment, is that from... Oh, there's a comment from Wilfred Zaha as well.
Yeah, Patrick, is that... I put that in there.
What did Wilf have to say?
Well, Wilf said, find it. Will said, want to be helping the team by scoring goals. So good to get one today, but ultimately disappointed not to get anything from the game. Positives to take from the performance and goal to take into next week. And just he said similar on the post-match. So again, the players, again, disappointed, which is good. You know, you obviously want them to be disappointed. But again, the fact that they were so positive about the performance and want to move on is a good thing. And I'm just glad Wilf's on the scoreboard. Hopefully he'll push on.
Absolutely right. Well, anyway, look, we better leave it there. Gone on quite a long time. So apologies we can't get to any more of your contact. I say do get in touch in future weeks. In particular, like to hear some from you on WhatsApp with some voice messages. That number, 0203-575-1266. And of course, as well as our social accounts, you can email us hi@backofthenest.com. So it'll be Love Sport on Tuesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Do check that one out. It'll be obviously available as a podcast, or you can listen to it live on Tuesday evening. Just check out the Love Sport site for that. And of course, the preview guys will be back looking ahead to the Burnley game, probably be out on Thursday at some point, I would suggest. So they'll obviously get your questions into those guys as well on the socials. Thank you very much for joining us. Cheers to DR and Patrick and to Mikey for editing this later on. And we'll see you again soon. Cheers. Bye.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.